You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Scott.
Marty.
We're here. We've been working together on something for the last, 2 months now?
Measured in AI years, probably 2 years.
Yes.
But yes, at least a couple months.
Yeah. And so I think we just jump right into it because we're launching the PDF that we've been working on, the Bitcoin Treasury and Exit Playbook, which we've been mulling around again for the better part of 2 months. And basically what you're doing at Capital B Advisory, what I'm doing at TFTC and 1031, what the Bitcoin price is doing right now going up. I think it's important for business owners to understand, particularly private business owners, to understand the opportunity that Bitcoin presents them as a balance sheet asset. So we banged our heads and our clankers together for the better part of 2 months. We came up with this playbook, which you can go get now. The link to the playbook is in the show notes here, so you can go find those. But yeah, I think that's what we're going to do today, just walk through the playbook. But before we walk through it, maybe explain what the audience will get out of this if they listen to the end and why you're passionate about this particular part of the market.
Yeah, I think hopefully a useful tool. You know, clanker aside, the content is ours with a lot of thought and detail into it. It's a playbook for, you know, the Bitcoin space has a lot of advice on what to do as an individual. And some individuals are business owners, and those Bitcoiners need a guidebook for what that looks like for their business. Because at the end of the day, the goal on the individual side and the business side is to get as much Bitcoin as possible. I have sort of a decade of experience helping private business owners raise capital, whether that's selling the business, raising debt or equity. And recently brought that skill set specifically to the Bitcoiner business owner sector, which is not to say Bitcoin-focused businesses and services exclusively, but rather just anyone with the mindset of a Bitcoiner should probably get advice when it comes to raising capital or selling their business from someone with the mindset of a Bitcoiner. So that's the idea. Playbook has lots of nuggets of wisdom. From the dipping your toes to stacking a little bit of sats with the company cash flow to how do we augment that to should I own this thing at all? When Bitcoin is your opportunity cost, that question gets a lot harder to answer. So that's the attempt, and hopefully some good wisdom in there.
Yeah, and I guess we start out, it's broken up into four parts. The first part is the case for Bitcoin Treasury in the first place. Like why, if you're a business owner, whether you're a Bitcoiner or not, should you be thinking about this? Obviously, Michael Saylor, Strategy, been a big meme in public markets over the last almost 5 years. But this strategy applies to private businesses as well and probably is actually better for private businesses.
It does, and it is, with the caveat that it's a little less financial engineering, right? Like Saylor's created a magical flywheel that I think people will study for ages. In the private markets, it's a little simpler. The opportunity is similar, though, which is, you know, accumulating Bitcoin on the balance sheet for business is augmenting the performance in the balance sheet, whereas the historical sort of fiat landscape for valuing businesses is all based on the P&L. And so you start to accumulate this hard asset. It gives you optionality to do other things. First section is kind of Bitcoin curiosity around the Bitcoiner business owner. Okay, What do I do? What should I do to start to explore that? Same as when you're first exploring Bitcoin as an individual, you start to, you know, get the advice of, hey, I should DCA. I should be careful not to be in a forced seller position and over the short term. All these things apply, but in the business owner perspective, there's other factors. A big one being that, you know, if you own control, then the difference between doing this on your personal balance sheet and on your corporate balance sheet there might be no difference. There might be major tax implications. And if you have sort of shared equity with family members or early investors or scaled investors, then suddenly the unilateral control to distribute capital is limited. But if you own control, then you still have the control to raise cash or to put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So for some folks, it's like, hey, my father-in-law is a minority investor. And if I distribute share, you know, if I distribute cash to buy Bitcoin on my personal balance sheet, I've got to distribute cash to him too. And he's not going to buy Bitcoin with it. And I'm tired of arguing with him at Thanksgiving. I'm just going to buy Bitcoin and put it on the company balance sheet so that he now owns some Bitcoin through that minority equity position. So lots of little factors in there. I think at the solo entrepreneur and small business phase, it's really hard to distinguish between the personal balance sheet and the professional sort of corporate balance sheet. But as you get into that sort of $2, $5, $50 million of free cash flow, you're talking about businesses that have different trade-offs between the tax and the shareholder dynamics for stacking sats in the corporate entity versus distributing to shareholders.
Well, not only that, too, is once you get to those larger scales of cash flowing and then stacking cash on the balance sheet, the opportunity cost of keeping it in cash versus something like Bitcoin is extremely high. And that's something we describe in the first section as well, is
that's again, right.
Trying to make the case why should your business have Bitcoin on its balance sheet?
Well, exactly. And I think, you know, do I expect the sort of non-Bitcoiner to crack this book and go, oh my gosh, this is it? Maybe not, but I think it's going to help. And that first section is just explaining, like, look, if you have $10 million of working capital cash that you keep on hand to fund payroll and inventory and maintenance capex, that, you know, that's a painful necessity, because over a year's time, if you're, you know, everyone's experience inflation is different. The CPI number is just one metric, but for most folks, especially in businesses, you know, you're probably closer to PPI. That metric is still totally manipulated. But the reality, I think, for most businesses, especially if they have to accumulate any hard assets on the balance sheet, is like 10% purchasing power loss every year. So $10 million of working capital cash gets you $8 million worth of stuff in a year. That's a huge, that's an important piece of the business to have optimized. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to skin that cat, but certainly just sitting on a pile of cash is not the best way to do it.
No. And then in terms of bringing this back to like board members, family members, I think the way in which we describe the frame is really highlighting that problem that you just described of the erosion of the purchasing power, the cash sitting on your balance sheet, and basically having them recognize that first. So if you do have a board or a group of people you need to convince, I think framing and backing into a Bitcoin treasury strategy is very important here.
Start with the problem. Exactly. Yeah. I think, and this is true for orange pilling your friends and family, your colleagues, or in the boardroom. Start with the problem. You know, who does a really good job of this is Jeff Booth, right? He was in 9 chapters of the book, Price of Tomorrow, before he mentions the word Bitcoin. And he paints the problem pretty well. So I agree. It's the same approach there. Because the odds that, even if you are sort of fully orange-pilled Bitcoiner, it's not likely that your $20 million EBITDA business has a perfectly aligned board on this topic or shareholder group. It's common. I see a lot of like brothers-in-law that co-own businesses. That's a very common dynamic, right? Guys end up brothers-in-law through marrying, and then they start a business sometime in their 30s. And by their 40s or 50s, they've got like a really nice asset. One of them's a Bitcoiner, one's not. This is a super common dynamic. I'm actually working with some clients right now that have this dynamic. They're not brothers-in-law, but they are, you know, dear friends. One's totally down the rabbit hole. The other one's tiptoeing. So this would be a great tool for that conversation.
Mm-hmm. And then moving into the tactical playbook and sort of frameworks for thinking about how to approach an allocation, depending on the scale of your business, the buy-in from board or brothers-in-laws that you may need.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the last thing you want to do is rock the boat. So you want to be careful that you don't kind of say, all right, team, we're all in Bitcoin on October 6th of 2025, right? And then suddenly your working capital situation is dire. So, you know, the case is going to be different for every single business and situation, but thoughtful approach to what's our runway? What's our burn? What is our sort of cash conversion cycle? And what can we do to safely move some of the value that's trapped in that situation into Bitcoin? And I think boards think about this anyway, because they certainly don't want you sitting on cash, but usually it's, hey, reinvest in the business. But if the reinvestment in the business is like a 10-15% return on invested capital, you know, you probably want to evaluate other options, a la Bitcoin. It's a lot less work to sit in Bitcoin and clip that success. It's also very hard to sell a board on that when we're at, you know, 70-some K and down 40%+, but it's also the best time to do it.
It is. No, we touch on it in the playbook as well, but I think building on what you were just saying there with our experience at 1031, and we've seen this within our portfolio, Grant Gillum, co-founder and a partner of mine at 1031, he wrote this piece, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, maybe even longer than that. At this point, Bitcoin is the fourth lever of equity value growth. And it's something we've highly encouraged portfolio companies to do, particularly if Bitcoin is significantly below the price of the previous all-time high, and they've raised around, has put a chunk of that into Bitcoin. Make sure you have enough runway to reinvest in the business and make payroll and all that, but put a chunk in Bitcoin, build out your company, your product suite as quickly and as efficiently as possible, run as lean as possible, get to revenue, profitability, and you'll find at the end of the day, Bitcoin is this forcing function to make you efficient, to make sure that you're not adding a ton of bloat to your organization. And then on top of that, once you get to profitability you're looking pretty, like when you go back to market and Bitcoin has appreciated, that takes 2-3 years, the value of the business is looking good. And then you have incredible optionality,
right,
as a founder. So a bit different scale where you're talking like mid-market established companies spitting out cash
but
flow.
But it's true either way. Yeah. Grant, I don't know where it was. Grant gave a presentation I watched on YouTube.
Riga.
Yes. And he's got great memes in there. Grant does a wonderful job of balancing Wall Street jargon and memes. I think there's a Michael Jackson Thriller zombie image in there that gets to the heart of the problem, which is a lot of businesses, you know, if their sort of hurdle rate was Bitcoin, then they shouldn't exist. And yes, the you guys at 1031 have lived it. The scale is different in venture, but honestly, you know, I think a lot of the way 1031 thinks about investment is more like a private equity fund. I mean, you know, Bitcoin Land doesn't have, you know, super copious numbers of $10-20 million EBITDA businesses, but you know, I think you guys are working hard to change that with the investments you make. And whether a business is negative cash flow like a venture opportunity or mid-market and, you know, cash flowing quite nicely, the math is the same, which is, you know, holding a bunch of cash for the long term is for sure not the best idea. Then the question is just, well, what is the right mix? And I definitely think that from the investor perspective, from the 1031 perspective, you guys have probably seen it where having Bitcoin on balance sheet augments the equity value math in a way that's been helpful in otherwise, you know, down times in business cycles. And you're right. I think it sounds too simple, but really just as long as you're not like right at all time highs, it's probably an okay time to stack aggressively into a Bitcoin treasury for the long term. And I think we talk about it in the book, in the PDF here, but you guys have seen that firsthand, right? I mean, some of the 1031 portcos have kind of weathered longer than they otherwise would have because they raised and allocated meaningfully that raise to Bitcoin. And now it gives them more runway because it's more than it was if they would have kept it in dollars.
Yeah. And I think this gets into a good point of the playbook as well, which is running through the sort of tactical decision tree of do I lump sum, do I DCA, in what situation should I do either or? And I think that's very important too, because I think a lot of what we see in the 1031 is a raise, and most companies will do a DCA over a set period of time.
Yep. And that set period of time is less than a 4-year, you know, if cycles exist, it's less than a 4-year cycle. There's not a right answer on this. That one, I mean, I'll tell you, on the personal side, whatever, if anybody could just look through all my trades, they should just do the exact opposite. Now, Michael Saylor is competing for top tick king, but I'm pretty darn good at it. But the good news is if you just wait it out, that trade ends up being a good trade anyway. But that said, you know, I like what Adam Back says about this. It's like if you take out, what is it, the 10 best days of a year in Bitcoin, you're just like down hilariously, which means time in the market is more important than timing the market. I think the DCA strategy just feels responsible when you're doing it with like large quantities, right? When you get into 7, 8, or 9 figures, it's kind of nervy to be the guy that hit the button to do the spot buy. Because again, you know, even if you're the control shareholder, like whether that's at Thanksgiving or at board meetings, someone's going to be yelling at you if the timing was wrong. And so I think there's a balance there. And at the end of the day, you know, the advice is just advice and the business owner has to decide. But I think that's right. It's like some version of we're going to like size into this over 6 months or 12 months. But also case dependent, right? How intense is your seasonality on cash conversion, right? It's like, oh, we buy a ton of equipment in the fall. Well, let's not run out of cash in the fall then. So, you know, that's always going to be a case by case situation, but, the sooner you're off zero, the better. And I think for some businesses that'll be the case, but many it'll be, we want to move what is already a personal Bitcoin strategy into the corporate here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's important to elaborate on this too, because we say it in the piece that if you pick a certain strategy, like let's say you want to DCA a certain amount, either into perpetuity over a fixed period of time, and let's say the Bitcoin price dumps by 30%, you stop doing it because you're scared out of the market. Like that is
right.
You have to go into this with the mental framework that there is going to be volatility.
Whatever plan you set, yeah, you have to stick to it. The easy part is buying the Bitcoin, and ask any long-term Bitcoin holder. The hard part is stomaching the volatility. So absolutely set a plan, work with an advisor to set that plan, be deliberate about, establishing that plan outwardly with the, key stakeholders, whether that's the management team or shareholders or brothers-in-law, so that you, have something other than your own, emotions to point to when decisions are being made on that strategy. Because for sure, if you're new to Bitcoin and you started sizing into it in October of this year, you probably have a little heartburn right now. But if you've set a playbook and you're sticking to it, then you can kind of rest easy that we need to see this all the way through before we get heartburn and change our strategy.
All right, now let's walk into the spectrum of sort of different Bitcoin strategies depending on where the particular business owner is in their personal journey with their business. Some Bitcoiners that run businesses are like, hey, I'm going to keep running this for 10 years, so I'm just going to do a set and forget a DCA strategy over the next decade. Others are later in their careers and looking to make an exit and sort of framing what options exist to acquire Bitcoin using your business across that spectrum. And for those who are closer to selling their businesses, what does the landscape look like? Why is now opportunistic? The
Bitcoiner business owner hero's journey, I call it. Was similar to the individual Bitcoiner hero's journey. You start stacking some sats, you get excited, you sit in the red for 2 or 3 years, then you're kind of permanently in the green, you continue to stack sats, you start looking around at what else can I sell, you start liquidating IRAs and other positions. You know, a decade in, you sell your chairs. The hero's journey on the business owner side looks similar. The scale is different, but the game is similar. Stacking Bitcoin to the balance sheet, some conservative portion of cash flow. Okay, get more aggressive. Okay, 100% of cash flow. Okay, can we borrow money against the business to accelerate that? Can we pull forward accumulation? And then Bitcoin or business owners thinking about the end game for their business, have a different hurdle because Bitcoin, you know, historical CAGR, pick your number, 30, 40, 50% makes you really want to own more of that thing. And if you're looking at your business saying, okay, next year, if we want to grow 10%, we need to put in, need to reinvest into the business meaningfully. And we run the math on that. And the return on invested capital there is 15%, for example. In fiat land, that's great, right? Private equity will underwrite that all the time because they'll use leverage and they'll augment that and they'll make nice returns for their LPs. In Bitcoin land, you're like, okay, I can spend whatever, make 15% return on it with a bunch of risk, execution and otherwise, or I could have taken that same cash and just bought Bitcoin. Then it gets harder. So then you start thinking through, okay, the hurdle rate for a Bitcoiner business owner is that Bitcoin CAGR. And the hurdle rate for the potential acquirers of your business is the fiat treasuries CAGR or yield. And so what we're seeing, and this is in the materials, is that the fiat markets are overvaluing your business because they don't understand Bitcoin. I have a theory that the reason private equity hasn't yet come to understand Bitcoin is because if you take their playbook, which is 5 to 7 years of illiquidity, and you apply it to just buying and holding Bitcoin for 5 to 7 years, it kind of begs the question of like, why does this industry exist at all? Why are we allocating capital, paying 2 and 20 to these private equity professionals for them to underperform spot Bitcoin, which is liquid 24/7, tradable 365 around the globe? And if I just don't touch it for 5 to 7 years, I probably outperform 99% of private equity funds. That is your advantage as a business owner, because they're going to keep valuing businesses that way. It's their job to deploy that capital. That's, you know, private equity fund, LP capital, limited partners, think teachers' pension funds and the firefighters union and its university endowments, chasing yield to pay their pension liabilities and other sort of long-term liabilities like from insurance funds. And they have to make a return. So there is this artificial bid for nice cash flowing businesses. And you can take those proceeds if you're at that stage in your business and sell all of it, part of it, raise some debt, or just stack a little bit of Bitcoin. But all across that menu of options, depending on where you are as a business owner, you can use it. You can use sort of future performance, either equity value or cash flow, to accumulate Bitcoin at what I think everyone agrees is lower prices than it will be in the future. That's the exciting trade. And so you can see in the materials, you know, the overall equity valuations across public and private markets for these businesses, the enterprise values rather, is just going up and to the right. There are interruptions around COVID and whatever else, and I'm sure what's going on right now in macro isn't great for valuations, but overall, the trend is just up and to the right. So we see inflation everywhere, including in asset prices. That is coming to Bitcoin, but while it's still overstated in equities, you own equity as a business owner. So there's a monetization opportunity, but it is not near as simple as logging into Fidelity and selling shares of Apple Computer. The private markets are very illiquid, clunky. It takes months to negotiate. It's a lot of heartbreak. But deal making is a ton of fun. And so that's CBA's pitch.
Sup, freaks? Guess what? Just booked my tickets to Vegas, headed for Bitcoin 2026. It's that time of the year, April 27th to 29th in Las Vegas. I'm going to be there. A ton of people are going to be there. You better get your ass there. You know what? People are calling it bear market. You know, these are the best conferences. I've been going since 2019 when it was in a parking garage in San Francisco. If you want to get the best possible ticket prices, make sure you use our link and the code TFTC. You go to 2026.b.tc. Use the code TFTC. You'll get 10% off. You can bundle with a hotel room to save big and make the most of your experience staying on site at the Venetian. That is where I will be. Ticket prices are increasing, so make sure you get yours today. Join Bitcoiners from all around the world. It's a global endeavor. It's a pilgrimage, if you will, for the ultimate networking experience. There's going to be a ton of people there. You can hear from the biggest names in the industry. Sailor's going to be there. Matt and I and the Pub Key Boys and the Bugle Boys, we're going to have live hot style takeover. That's going to be there too. All in the Venetian. Everybody's meeting up. It's going to be fun. Get there. 2026.b.tc. Use the code TFTC at sign up.
Sup, freaks. This rip of TFTC was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. BitKey makes Bitcoin easy to use and hard to lose. It is a hardware wallet that natively embeds into a 2 or 3 multi-sig. You have one key on the hardware wallet, one key on your mobile device, and Block stores a key in the cloud for you. This is an incredible hardware device for your friends and family, or maybe yourself, who have Bitcoin on exchanges and have for a long time, but haven't taken the step to self-custody because they're worried about the complications of setting up a private public key pair, securing that seed phrase, setting up a PIN, setting up a passphrase. Again, BitKey makes it easy to use, hard to lose. It's the easiest 0-to-1 step, your first step to self-custody. If you have friends and family on the exchanges who haven't moved it off, tell them to pick up a BitKey. Go to bitkey.world, use the key TFTC20 at checkout for 20% off your order. That's bitkey.world, code TFTC20.
Well, let's go into those three different scenarios you listed. Sell the whole company, maybe sell part of it.
Yep.
Roll it back in alongside the PE sponsor.
And yeah, so, and then the other one is keep it, right? Yep. So the first one is, hey, return on invested capital in this business is now like objectively unexciting to me as the owner. I want to take all of my chips and go home. And my chips are going into Bitcoin. That is the full sale strategy. I think the biggest thing for that plan is exit planning, which needs to happen way before you decide to go to market. I tell business owners, you should work hard for years in advance to make yourself useless to the business. That way, when the time comes to sell, the buyer isn't saying, okay, you need to be, I need you shackled to the desk here, right? I like to joke that private equity funds, they buy your company. They don't want you to go to the beach. They want you to drive a really nice car to the office every day. And so you've got to work really hard as an owner entrepreneur to do the one thing that you've always most times struggled to do, which is take your hands off and start empowering your team to run the business without you. So that when you do go to exit, you really are a passive shareholder, because passive shareholders get paid cash. Active shareholders get paid in earnouts and other, you know, contingencies that tie you to the business. The next category is like, hey, I really like my business. It's got a great return on invested capital. The opportunity to grow here is huge, but I'm tired of betting the farm and I'm overweight my company and underweight Bitcoin. And so I don't want to miss the boat on Bitcoin, but I also am not ready to sell my job away. I like running this business. You are, in that case, private equity's favorite, because you're saying, I want somebody to give me some money to take risk off the table, and then I want to go pursue the half a dozen aggressive growth strategies that I've always thought about but always been scared to go after, because I don't want to personally guarantee. I can't get the bank to give me that much money, whatever the risk. Private equity is going to eat that alive. They love that, because they're saying, hey, there's a bunch of low-hanging fruit. The only reason this hasn't already happened in this business is because the owner is tired of doubling down with basically, and sometimes literally, signing the deed to his house to the downside case. So in that case, you know, sell a portion of your business to a private equity fund or other acquirer, roll some of your ownership into a minority position, stay in an operator seat, and go execute on that next phase of growth, and know that you're partnered with people on the balance sheet in the investment that their job is to make 3-5x on their money. And so you're riding along in your minority position with that, but you've also just taken some cash off the table. You've likely eliminated personal guarantees in the business, and you're in a position to really chase the next phase of growth with the institutional sophistication that didn't exist before, right? They're going to help you set up a board. They're going to give you strategic planning, but you also are going to have, you know, in a worst case description, you're going to have bosses. So there's a balance there. And then the far end of the spectrum would be, you know, don't partner with these folks at all. I think it would be like, this is definitely the case in a lot of Bitcoin companies, is if a Bitcoiner has started a business, they have looked at the risk reward and said, I think I can outperform Bitcoin here. TFTC and CBA are both great examples. And like, can you picture a scenario where you would sell equity for anything beyond like a insane valuation? Probably not, because you want to grow and be the beneficiary of all of that cash flow. And so I think in that scenario, if you've got lightning in a bottle, then your goal should be to never give away any equity unless you're at that stage. So I think that's the early stage, right? Stack Bitcoin, grow the business on your own. That mid stage is really interesting because there's a lot of that happening. And then that final stage, you've really got to make sure that your transaction preparedness puts you in a position to not be a key man or mission critical to that transaction.
Yeah. Let's go back to two parts. One being the second option, you sell part of the business, roll alongside the PE firm. I think another thing that we highlight in the playbook as well is like, you take the proceeds, buy Bitcoin, you're long Bitcoin, PE fund at the end of your relationship, they get their nut, and then you have the potential of Bitcoin has a good run during your engagement with the PE firm to buy your company back.
Yeah, this would be so fun. I think we'll find this, we're looking for this client at CBA, but I love the idea of using the private equity fund's money to buy Bitcoin on the personal side, watching them, you know, make some smart decisions, but maybe some dumb ones too. And at the end of their sort of 5-7 year process, they're, you know, hiring an investment banker to go sell that business. You're a minority owner and you're like, actually, I'll buy it. And you use your Bitcoin stack, which has probably grown much faster than their investment in your business, to reclaim ownership of your business. I think that would be really interesting. I've had clients who've lived this experience where, you know, they sold to a big private equity fund. It didn't go great, whether growth slowed down or leverage was poorly managed or whatever it was. And they end up, you know, partnering with other groups to buy back the business and sort of right the course and grow it again. And I think, you know, entrepreneurs are kind of serial, they're very competitive and they like to win. And I think it'd be a pretty cool win to unlock some liquidity from your business, use it to accumulate Bitcoin at what we all agree are lower prices today than they will be in the future. And then fast forward to that future date and say, hey, private equity guys, nice trade you did there. I'll actually take it back. And oh, by the way, it's going to take me half of the cash you gave me 5-7 years ago because I stored it in Bitcoin.
Yeah. And then second thing to bring it up on, you're a Bitcoiner ourselves, own a business. I alluded to it earlier with how 1031 portfolio company founders typically view their businesses, but Bitcoiners are good business operators, or they yes. should be at least.
That is the thesis for CBA. So I'm counting on the Bitcoin community to prove me right, which is, I think Bitcoiners are by nature contrarians. They have figured out something that requires a lot of humility. Now, I'm not saying we're all humble, but we had to start humble, right? Because you had to say, okay, what am I wrong about? Oh, literally everything when it comes to money. And then you sort of re-educated yourself on the Bitcoin standard. So if that is an archetype, and I think somebody just did some research on like the emotional intelligence strategy or whatever.
Myers-Briggs. I think Brandon Quinnum did that years ago, but he brings it up periodically.
It must have just hit, like, it bubbled up to me recently. And it's like, you know, Bitcoiners are one of two types. I think my thesis is that Bitcoiners are good business owners because they have figured out something that takes a lot of research and humility to understand. And if that you apply that mentality to businesses, my thesis is that, like, being Bitcoin first as an advisor to business owners, I'm going to get to work with all the best business owners because all the best businesses will be run by Bitcoiners. And it's also a fun top of funnel because there's no such thing as someone who's like, oh yeah, I used to be into Bitcoin. And so my TAM for people that want to work with CBA because they want to work with the advice of an advisor that understands Bitcoin is just however many Bitcoiners there are in their own businesses. And I'm betting on that number going up forever.
Yeah. I think it will. And the thing I wanted to bring up after is just like highlighting that this is real, and not only is it real, it's more real than it's ever been because of the emergence of AI tools, right? Like talking about running lean operations. I think that's one thing we've really bonded over the last 2 months is banging our heads together, talking about our AI setups and what it's done for our individual businesses.
Yeah, I owe you a big thank you. So all anecdotes about AI and deflation that are useful for this is primary to my business, and it's thanks to you. So I was playing around with OpenClaw, like everyone, in late February, and was trying to hook it up to Maple. Ambitious, you know, privacy preserving, the right ethos. And you and I were chatting, and I'm like, this thing is a net negative to my productivity right now. What am I doing wrong? And you encouraged me, you know, the trade-off is obviously privacy, but you're running a business. So it's not like you have super good privacy on that side anyway. Lean into the frontier models and also lean into the spend. Find a way to justify it, right? So if you're pinching pennies on your AI subscription, that's not the right approach. Find a way to make it pay for itself. And that advice from you was probably in late February. And, you know, the anecdote for CBA is that prior to late February, the goal, so I launched this firm in October of last year. I was previously a vice president at Cantor Fitzgerald, not on their crypto stuff, but just a middle market investment banker. And so I launched this in October. The goal from October to sort of, I'll call it, you know, D-Day for OpenClaw and AI was to grow the business to a scale where I could justify $1 million of G&A, a team of five, maybe three associates and two analysts or two associates and three analysts in investment banking to support deal execution for my top of funnel deal flow. Enter OpenClaw and frontier models, agentic AI in general. And now I'm not sure that CBA ever needs a junior team member. And so like people say, well, you know, where is the actual deflation in AI? Well, I mean, it's $1 million of savings a year for CBA. And I know that you're seeing this on your side too, but it's just, that's happening really quick. Business owners, especially in the middle market that aren't going to get disrupted by like, oh, we're a SaaS and we just don't exist anymore, that, you know, live in the physical world molecules wise, their opportunity to layer AI into their stack is like, they can probably shave multiple $1 million out of G&A. And so, you know, let's go after that as the Bitcoin community and make even greater businesses and then use those to accumulate Bitcoin.
Yeah, and the anecdote from our side, I think this playbook is a perfect example of it. Like I said, we banged our clankers together. It's not really for the content itself, but it's structuring it in a way like this PDF that we have. I think it's very beautiful. And
the bigliest.
This has been an idea, like partnering with somebody like you to do sort of like a collaboration on something specific in the space. In this case, the Bitcoin Treasury and Exit Playbook for private businesses. But I've wanted to do this for years. But in my mind, it's like I've got myself. The team has grown. We've added two team members, so including myself, there's six of us. A couple of them are part time. Over the last year, we've added two, and I've never had the confidence or the resources to be like, okay, if I wanted to do something like this, I'd probably have to go hire a designer or somebody who can just run and lead this stuff. And now that's not the case. Like, we can sit there. We went back and forth over multiple calls over the course of 6 weeks about how this is going to be structured. And then we got our final sort of text and the graphics we wanted to put in, and boom, the Clanker was able to actually format and design.
It's incredible.
The PDF in minutes.
Yeah. I think that this, it turns you, I think I'm stealing this from you, somebody, I listen to a lot of podcasts, it turns the ideas guy into a results guy. And you've got great ideas, and those can now basically come into existence with a voice message. I know the Bitcoin community is very like pro privacy, and that there's massive trade-offs running these things on frontier models where they're for sure hoovering up your data. But look, if you're a business owner, who are you kidding yourself? All of your data is getting eaten alive. And I know that's not a good answer. Like, that's a quitter's answer. But also, I think if we look at where open source models are today, 6 to 12 months from now, I think it's not unrealistic to say we can self-host some of these things. Now, that won't be cheap. But if you're a business owner getting $1 million worth of G&A value out of running agents through OpenClaw, Hermes, whatever other agentic harness, and you need to spend $30,000 on GPUs, okay, it's pretty easy to do the math on that ROI. And so you can either sit around and wait for open source models to be ready for that so you don't ever have to violate the privacy, but you'll also be, you know, we mentioned at the beginning, it's like AI is like dog years. Like, you'll be years behind if you don't play with these things now, so that when you can, you know, take an open source model and your own hardware and run it, you're ready because you've already built the systems and processes around the business to be ready for that.
Yeah, and I feel like we're very fortunate at TFTC because we run a media business. A lot of our output is public anyway. And so the input on the back end is just like a lot of source material. If our chats were to get leaked, it's just us being like, hey, literally read everything we've ever written, create our voice, and here's the topics we're interested in. Here's the source material we want to report on. Help us format it the right way. And it is funny. There are a lot of Luddites out there who are, this is all AI slop. I don't think they understand, like, yes, AI is helping with the output, the end output, but there's a lot of curation and context provided before that. And I showed you the sort of hockey stick growth we've seen in terms of engagement and what's happening. And I think despite what the Luddites are saying, like, the proof is in the pudding. Like, it's helping us be better at disseminating information.
Absolutely. If you're already a master of your craft, which I'd like to think that you are, I like to think that I am, adding AI to your stack augments you in the same way that Tony Stark's Iron Man suit augments him. If you are not, then you become a slop cannon. And there is no in-between. And so I think what I've found, actually, great example. I actually launched a side business focused on this. I'm helping folks in the Bitcoin community and now sort of just broader community get these harness setups running on their own machines. And I recommend the frontier models, even though there's a privacy trade-off. Every single one of my 30 plus customers now has started their own business. I think there might be one exception to that. And in every case, they're not saying, hey, AI, how do I make money? They're taking what they're already good at and working with their agent to build something that generates revenue or generates value for the world and bringing that to market. And so it's such a fun project to see folks kind of bear that out. What you see online that is, you know, causing the Luddite behavior is people will just get a new agent and say, make me money. You know, I think you and Matt probably went through this experience trying to have them, having the agents trade whatever marketplace. You know, there are high frequency funds that have been working on that strategy for a long time. And so there's not a lot of alpha there. But if you have literally anything that you think you're halfway decent at, you can basically build a business around it with like a few voice messages. So there's never been a better time to start a business. There's never been a better time to be in Bitcoin. I'm very bullish on all the above, and the intersection of AI and Bitcoin is pretty exciting. I didn't have in my base case for Bitcoin 50%+ deflationary event in AI sort of bringing value to the world. And my thesis is that the only strategy to solve for that, like, we can't have deflation in the economy. Like, central planners could be laser-eyed Bitcoiners. They don't have a choice. They can't have the value of the money go up. So they're going to have to print the difference. And so, like, when I first got into Bitcoin as a gold bug, and I was like, wow, they have to print so much money. They have to print so much money. I have friends in the Bay Area, Bitcoiners, San Francisco area that we keep in touch, even though I've moved away. They are my original sort of Bitcoin meetup folks. And whenever we're texting about macro, I usually end our conversations with, they are going to print so much money. And for better or worse, AI accelerates that, I think.
So, freaks, when you take Bitcoin seriously, you start with custody. You want to control your keys, avoid single points of failure, and make sure your savings cannot disappear because you or someone else screwed up. That is what Unchained has been focused on since 2016. Unchained is the leader in collaborative multi-sig custody and Bitcoin financial services that keep you in control. They secure over $12 billion in Bitcoin for more than 12,000 clients. That means about one out of every 200 Bitcoin sits inside an Unchained vault. Their model is simple. You hold two keys, they hold one key. And it always takes two keys to move Bitcoin, meaning their single key can't access your Bitcoin on its own. Just resilient, shared custody that gives you institutional-grade security while keeping you sovereign. Unchained also lets you trade straight from your vault, access Bitcoin-backed commercial loans, open a Bitcoin IRA where you hold your own keys, and set up personal, business, trust, or retirement vaults. They even offer inheritance solutions built for long-term hodlers. Or opt for the highest level private client service with Unchained Signature and get a dedicated account manager, discounted trading fees, exclusive access to events and features, and much, much more. If you want a partner that helps you secure and grow your Bitcoin without giving up control, go to unchained.com and use the code TFTC10 at checkout to get 10% off your new Bitcoin multisig vault. That's TFTC10 at unchained.com.
What's up, freaks? This rip is brought to you by our good friends at CrowdHealth. I've been a happy CrowdHealth member for almost 5 years now. My wife and I have had two children while we've been on CrowdHealth, and I actually just got the last bill for our third child funded. It was $6,157. CrowdHealth negotiated down to $2,309, and we only paid $500. The rest was crowdfunded by the CrowdHealth Network. If you're sick of health insurance premiums and having to pay deductibles and getting ripped off at the hospital, join CrowdHealth. It's an alternative way to pay for your healthcare. It's not health insurance. It's crowdfunded healthcare. As you can tell, they negotiate prices for you. You pay in cash. It's much cheaper. Overall, we're much happier. They have incredible perks. Go to joincrowdhealth.com/TFTC to sign up. 5 years on CrowdHealth, not looking back. Joincrowdhealth.com/TFTC. Use the promo code TFTC. Once you set up your account, you're going to get $99 a month for your subscription for the first 3 months.
We got a bit of an AI tangent. We gloss over it in the piece, but maybe we can do a whole another one on that. How Bitcoin optimizes business, or AI optimizes business, and then you can use the efficiencies and the productivity and hopefully the revenue and cash flow gains to funnel it into Bitcoin. But bringing it back to the playbook and just tying a knot in the exit decision or the three decisions that we talked about, why moving now as opposed to waiting?
Yeah. So, set aside Bitcoin for a second. The conversation I have with business owners for all of my career in fiat land, in private equity, in fiat land M&A, in private equity as a buyer, in fiat land M&A, because I sort of went both sides of the deal table. It's always, you know, now is an okay time to sell, but I don't want to take the tax hit because I've got, you know, X value in the business. And when I sell it, you know, 80% of it's going to be ordinary income, 20% of it's going to be ordinary income, and the other 80% is going to be goodwill, which will be taxed at cap gains rates. Nobody wants to give away, like, say you sell a business for $100 million and you give 30 of it to Uncle Sam. Like, that's really painful. And I don't think it's an ethically good thing to do even. So, like, I understand a lot of business owners are like, well, I want to delay that. I want to deal with that later. I want to get my house in order, figure out a way to avoid more of that tax. And I agree, like, there are legal and trust and tax efficiency stuff that we kind of allude to. We are neither of us professionals in those categories. I think you should get good advice in those categories. But if you're like waiting to sell or raise capital or take chips off the table because you think that you'll somehow save money on taxes later, if Bitcoin is your opportunity cost, good luck. Because the American HODL says, this thing's a runaway freight train. Like, every day you wait, the risk that you never see that price again is real. And so take the tax hit, see what that looks like, and stack Bitcoin today at today's prices versus waiting 5 years, assume any reasonable CAGR for Bitcoin, and then run the math later, even at a more efficient tax rate, you're going to see that you'd be better, you'd have more Bitcoin by making that trade today. And this is, well, this is a fun plug. Like, there's a calculator on the CBA website that helps you look at this, which is just, okay, do I raise capital now? Do I sell equity now, whether it's control or the whole thing or most of it or a minority, and use that to buy Bitcoin at today's prices? Or do I wait? Okay, well, what do I wait for? How long? Okay, what's the Bitcoin CAGR over that timeline? How much Bitcoin would I get if I waited? And it's, you know, that calculator, you know, I built it with my Clanker. It's pretty hard to get that calculator to show you that the better trade is to wait. And now, obviously, as an advisor who makes transactions happen, that is self-promoting, but it is also just mostly true, which is, if you look back on when you should have bought Bitcoin, yesterday was the best day. Today is the next best day. Any form of waiting usually ends up being a mistake.
Yeah. And then getting into the technical details, I think that's important. We can wrap up the four sections there, but then we'll get into some examples, which you provide at the end, some case studies. But in terms of what this looks like, not what this looks like in practice, but that's, I think, one of the underappreciated aspects of businesses getting into Bitcoin. You can convince them, like, all right, I'm in, I'm going to DCA, I'm going to lump sum, I'm going to do this, that, but what do you actually do? Who do you work with? Who are your counterparties?
So I want to be careful not to like pick favorites. There's a lot of good services out there. A rule I would suggest folks adopt is look for businesses, services, and advisors that are focused on Bitcoin only. In optimizing for more than just Bitcoin in the crypto world, usually corners are cut and shortcuts are taken that are dangerous. And if someone doesn't understand that Bitcoin is the signal amidst the crypto noise, then you have to sort of doubt the rest of their advice. And so start with that as a filter. And then I think there's several categories. So there's tax, right? You definitely want, well, you have to pay your taxes. You should do that every year. You probably have advice for that already. But I think tax efficiency for a transaction, whether that's raising capital to invest in the business, acquire a competitor, take chips off the table, sell outright, there are things you can do ahead of time with tax attorneys to be more efficient with that tax implication. Legal, from a structuring perspective, you know, when you transact, regardless of the type, there you'll be making representations and warranties that create scenarios where if what you said or disclosed during the transaction was untrue, that can have real recourse. And so you want to make sure that the attorneys helping you document your transaction are top-notch. Attorneys are painfully expensive, but sometimes it's money well spent. I'm curious to see how AI drives that cost down, because a lot of what they do is just pattern recognition. So I'm excited for discounts in that category, and I'll help businesses find them. So yeah, legal, tax. If it's Bitcoin accumulation, then you got to think about custody for sure. And there's no one size fits all. I think on one end of the spectrum, like a cold card in a desk at the CEO's office is a way to do it. But like, who are your shareholders? What is the risk profile? When do you need to move the Bitcoin? You could look at multi-sig setups where your board has a distributed set of keys. But then you run into this problem of like, okay, well, when we cycle out an employee, a C-level employee or a board member, we have to like do a key rollover ceremony. That can get messy. There are businesses and service providers that cover that space. What else am I missing? Trading. So obviously, like, if you're gonna deploy a Bitcoin accumulation strategy, you need to have an exchange acquire the Bitcoin for you, take your cash and give you sats for it. Trying to think of what else did we cover in there. There is a whole checklist that folks can go through, and I think it'll depend where you are.
I mean, being M&A pr- prepared. Like, you just don't. I think we touched on this earlier, but it's like, it's just not going to happen tomorrow. If you
That's right. Today. Yeah. You can't log into Fidelity and sell shares in TFTC and I can't in CBA. And so I think there's a lot of work to do there. It doesn't start when you decide you're ready. It starts well in advance. And so getting good advice on what that looks like, building a playbook and working towards it, whether that's a 12-month, 18-month, 3-year plan, you know, just a regular way M&A process could take you 6+ months. So, and then what you need in that checklist will depend on where you're at. And so this will dovetail nicely into case studies. So CBA's client base spans anyone that's a Bitcoiner. And so in some cases I'm helping, you know, seed round businesses make introductions to potential investors. In other cases, I'm working with scaled entrepreneurs selling the whole business because they have looked at the return on invested capital in that business and said, I'd rather own Bitcoin, and everything in between. And so in the sort of Bitcoiner seed round sort of stage, you're thinking about what portion of this raise do we allocate to Bitcoin? How do we manage against our burn? And you have these two trends of like, well, I want to raise as much cash as I can to buy Bitcoin today, but I don't want to sell any equity because the only reason I'm building this thing is because I think it's going to outperform Bitcoin. That's a very different mindset than fiat VC, where you're saying just raise as much cash as possible because that's all that matters. And the other end of the spectrum, before you come to the conclusion, I'm going to sell the whole thing, look at with an advisor, what does a partial sale look like? What does taking some chips off the table look like? Work with tax folks to look at what actually, you know, net proceeds is going to be. And then have a real sense of humor about it's not going to happen overnight because it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, I think to give tangible examples of companies that you've worked with, I mean, not to name them by name, but you have a few in here that I think would be helpful for people listening.
Yeah.
Maybe their business is similar. And so the franchisee, I think, is a really good one.
The franchisee is my favorite. And, I called him before this to see if he would mind what level of commentary I gave. And so, I'll keep it high level, but, a multi-site franchisee. So I've done a lot of multi-site franchisee M&A in my fiat days. This is a business in food, in restaurant, in a really nice scaled franchise brand. And the owner is a Bitcoiner. And so you're thinking, okay, well, that business has nothing to do with Bitcoin. The reason CBA is involved is because the owner is a Bitcoiner and he wants advice from another Bitcoiner. They are exploring the outright sale of that business because the return on invested capital of opening another store, another of the multi-site brand, is like 15%-ish with leverage. That's like not worth it when you think about the opportunity cost of just holding Bitcoin. And so for that situation, we got involved early and started talking about, hey, maybe you should raise some debt to put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So they started accumulating Bitcoin on their balance sheet a year ago. And the start of our conversation was, I think you should raise some debt. I at the time assumed he was pretty bullish on his business. I was like, I'm not telling you to sell equity. I think you should use debt to accumulate faster at lower Bitcoin prices last summer. And through that exercise and learning what the options were in the debt markets, he was like, man, I don't have that much conviction in the next 5 years of this trade to be long the equity with leverage just to get a little bit more Bitcoin exposure. And so through that exploration, we came to this conclusion of, I think there's a number where I'd like to sell this business. And so that's what we're working through right now. But that is a great example of one where he literally lived through the journey of just started stacking sats. We worked through that with him. Then we explored, well, could you use leverage to speed that up? There feels like a runaway freight train in Bitcoin right now. Last summer, we sort of all thought we weren't going to be where we are right now, but it still would have been a great trade if he ended up doing it. But through that exercise and looking at, okay, I have to do what? I'm going to have to personal guarantee potentially. I'm going to take on how much leverage? That's how much interest expense? Whoa, that's a lot of heartburn. I'm not that bullish on the brand here or the underlying investment opportunity. And so then I think the conclusion is going to be, let's sell this business. Now, part of the heartbreak in my business is the business owner retains up until the day of closing the right to change his mind and say, never mind. So I like to joke, you know, M&A advisory is like 364 days a year of heartbreak. And then one day a year, you're like crying tears of joy because you get a deal closed. So I think I might be a little bit masochist for enjoying it so much, but those closing days are very fun.
Yeah. All right. Next one, multi-unit operator.
That was the multi-unit operator. Okay. So I jumped out of order. The first one is really transaction preparation is more of an abstract of if you are in a sort of nice fiat business and you're thinking through what does that look like in 18 months, don't wait 18 months to call, right? There's a lot you can do ahead of time. The main thing we talked about earlier, which is make yourself replaceable, make yourself irrelevant to the business as the owner, as the control owner and entrepreneur. If everyone is paralyzed when you're on vacation, the investor, the buyer, whether it's a strategic or a private equity fund or a family office, is going to have a lot of trouble letting you go to the beach. And so then you get back to that analogy of they're going to want you to drive a really nice car to the office every day. So the work begins well in advance of a transaction to make yourself not needed.
Mm-hmm. And so you explored this option with the multi-unit franchise owner, but he decided not to, wants to sell the business, but diving into who the leverage equity play or leverage treasury play may make sense for.
Yeah. So that's what we explored in the mid stages with the multi-site operator, which was, I said, look, I think you're bullish your business, but you want to get more Bitcoin. You started stacking a year ago and you're kind of feeling behind as the price runs. You have access to the private capital markets, private credit. It, for all of its being in the news lately, is still $2 trillion of dry powder begging for anything good to lend to. And the anything good to lend to is cash flowing businesses. And so the idea there is, okay, let's go raise 3 or 4 times EBITDA, depending on the business and the situation, of debt capital, put that debt on the balance sheet, put the cash on the balance sheet on the other side, use that to acquire Bitcoin. Now, that's never really been done. Typically, these private credit funds, what they're underwriting is they give the owner a mountain of cash. The owner distributes that cash to himself. He buys a boat or an airplane or, you know, another vacation home. And in that case, the private credit fund's recourse, what they're lending against is the business. It's not the boat, the airplane, the house. That actually sits outside of the business. And so my argument to private credit, even though this sort of deal has never happened before, it's a better underwriting for them because now there's the equity and cash flow that you're used to underwriting, but there's also this Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So your private credit fund guys aren't going to suddenly become Bitcoiners. But even if they valued the cash Bitcoin on balance sheet at 50%, it should give more recourse to the loan than a typical, what it's called when you distribute the cash for the airplane situation, is a dividend recap. So this should be net better than a dividend recap from the private credit side. And safe to say, those folks are dying for a new form of deal with better collateral because we've seen what's happened to the public ones with redemptions.
You've seen the software credit deals aren't panning out as many thought they would 5 years ago.
I mean, I think you and I could both rattle through a half a dozen software, you know, B2B SaaS, like SMB SaaS products that we've replaced in our own businesses that otherwise I'd pay $50 to $100 a month that now I clank them together.
Yeah. What would you say to people who say this is insane? We're not going to have businesses. What's the incentive for anybody to go start a business?
I think that the Bitcoin hurdle rate does make it really hard to justify starting a business. But I mean, you and I are living proof that there's still businesses worth starting. But yeah, maybe that person is right when they say, if this continues, no one will ever open another Taco Bell. And I'd ask that person, well, does that sound like such a bad thing? So I do think that as the hurdle rate for investment capital rises, some businesses that currently look like good businesses will actually be exposed to be malinvestment. Because if I can make 30, 40, 50% CAGR holding Bitcoin, I'm not going to open another Taco Bell, as an example. There is this period of austerity where folks would rather save, and saving is investing in the future. So that's not a bad thing.
No. All right. Any final thoughts? Anything we didn't cover that we should get in here? I think this is very concise. I think we ran through the whole playbook.
I think it was good. I would just say, I think, so I want to give a shout out to the Bay Area Bitcoiners. So my Bitcoin origin story is mostly private. I didn't really sort of visit or talk with folks about Bitcoin and meet space for a few years. And when I finally did, it was during COVID in San Francisco. And so I was just like dying to talk to another human being. Those guys were the start of like kind of giving me the encouragement to, hey, like you should talk to people in person about Bitcoin because you do a good job of explaining it. And then I'm now in Charlotte, North Carolina. That's where we'll hope to stay for the long term. And I'm very involved in that group. So I also want to give a shout out to them. I think I would encourage everyone. And I, the reason I thought of Bitcoin meetup groups is because I'm hearing exhaustion from like 5-year Bitcoiners who are like, man, like if we get to September of this year and we're not higher, then I'm really in it for the tech at that point. And, you know, I'm in it for the tech too, but the tech is number go up. And I think one of two things is going to happen in September or by September. Because so September of this year, the 5-year rolling comp is a 65K high of September 2021. So either Bitcoin's return is going to look really mediocre, or we're going to laugh about how worried about the price of Bitcoin we were with the Strait of Hormuz stuff going on when you fast forward to September of this year. Put me in that second camp. But otherwise, I'll come back on and I'll help craft a new narrative that you just have to zoom out further. But I would just say, well, I would say what you say. We're going to win. And I'm excited for the future for Bitcoin.
We're going to win. Go check out the playbook. Let us know what you think. And yeah, if you're a business owner out there, I mean, I think what made me feel confident about writing this with you and now publishing it is that we're living it. Like TFTC runs on a Bitcoin standard. 1031 runs on a Bitcoin standard, CBA as well. And it, as somebody's been doing it, I've had Bitcoin on the balance sheet since before Sailor, 2019. It has helped us reinvest in the business. It has helped us, me as a business owner, grow the stack. And it is a very pivotal tool to our capital stack that has benefited us massively over the last 7 years.
Absolutely. And a huge thank you to you, Marty. Your openness to exploring this has been very well received, and I'm grateful for the partnership. So,
well, like I said, real recognize real, Scott. So that's all. Go read the playbook. Peace and love. Tiki!
Thank you for listening to this episode of TFTC. If you've made it this far, I imagine you got some value out of the episode. If so, please share it far and wide with your friends and family. We're looking to get the word out there. Also, wherever you're listening, whether that's YouTube, Apple, Spotify, make sure you like and subscribe to the show. And if you can leave a rating on the podcasting platforms, that goes a long way. Last but not least, if you want to get these episodes a day early and ad-free, make sure you download the Fountain podcasting app. You can go to fountain.fm to find that. $5 a month gets you every episode a day early, ad-free. Helps the show, gives you incredible value. So please consider subscribing via Fountain as well. Thank you for your time, and until next time.